Wonderful. Okay. Let me press that. I got it. And I got it. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to again continue and wrap up about baby namings. Just wanted to review a couple of what I think are important points from last week. There's really no halachot that I could discern about this whole issue. There are hashkafot about it. There are very strong opinions about it. How to name, form for whom to name, things of that nature. But one of the things that became a prominent thought last week was that there are many who consider the names that we give our children, these are not random. Even though you say, well, I came up with this name. There are many who say no, that parents are given a certain level of nevuah. They're given a certain level of Ruach HaKodesh to name their children kind of the right name. So whatever they think is an independent choice, there are many who say, not so fast. These are things that are aided from above, and we have to consider that when we name a child, or especially when we want to either add a name or rename somebody. We have to consider that that the name that we originally gave was not fully our choice, but it was guided heaven from heaven, as they say.
You see cases where parents name a child, let's say even at the bris, and they have a whole explanation of why they picked this name or why they picked that name. But even that, there is Ruach HaKodesh there. It's a
Yeah,
nice.
you hear that very often. Explanations, and then the omelets get cold. But you often hear a lot of parents. We named him Avram for this, David for that, etc. Another thought that became prominent last week was that if you look at the word neshama, that the middle two letters are the word shem, name, and that led a lot of great rabbis to feel and to express that the our name is our essence. Our name is our essence. And there are those that say that the neshama enters the child as soon as it's named. So for a boy, it would be, God willing, on the eighth day. A girl, whenever she's named, either at the soonest Torah reading or the soonest Shabbat or as soon as the mother can be there for the naming, there are those who felt that the neshama enters the body at the point where the name is being given. We also talked a little
How would
bit
that
about
work? How would that work if someone was delayed for medical reason, they don't have a neshama for 2 months?
that's an excellent question. Excellent question. Yeah, I don't know. I heard another
The fact
shiur
that
about that 2 days ago, and that was one of the questions. And this Rav said, I'm not sure.
what I've seen is that with a boy that could be sick and could be months and months he has a
Sure,
bris.
sure.
So the naming is not necessarily, I mean, it's the custom to do it at the bris, but they gave a name beforehand so they could pray for him.
Yep. So that's a pretty good solution. Bris could be down the road, but let's give him a name now so that we can use that name for tefillot, etc. There was also this notion we mentioned last week that naming after somebody, especially after somebody who is deceased, gives a zechut. Not only to the person who's being named, the child who's being named, but it's also a continuing zechut and legacy for the one after whom the child is named. And that became a very prominent idea last week. We also mentioned that in Mitzrayim, while the Jewish people were there, part of their zechut for being redeemed, they apparently had four. As mentioned in Midrash Rabbah, and one of them was that v'lo shinu et shemam, they did not change their names. They kept that part of their identity, and that was part of the zechut for their redemption. There was a commentary last week who said that naming a child after a grandparent or after a father or a mother, if they're not alive, is a form of kibud av ve'em midoraita. Like that's like a real a real honor to the father and the mother if they are named, their names continue within the family. We talked about the difference between Ashkenazim and Sfardim, that Ashkenazim tend to name after deceased people. Sfardim often name after living relatives, and Yemenites apparently have a custom to name after themselves. So I did not know that. And then I asked those gathered last Thursday, has anybody heard of somebody named Harvona? Harvona, who is Zachor Latov, but I've never met anybody named Harvona, but you might have.
Short to Harvey.
Oh, I see. It's Harvey, right. Yes, last time I went to that restaurant, Harvona's, it was really, really delicious. And yeah, the whole menu is a ganze Megillah, which I thought was very worthwhile. Anyway, Harvey's mother lives across the hall from us. So every morning I see her, I lick her fingers. Anyway, but maybe that's for another time. So, as I do whenever I saw the Kentucky Fried Chicken, Colonel Sanders, the Shinover Rav, he proposed an order for who names the children. So he said that the first child is named by the mother after somebody on her side. It's her choice, her option. The second child is named after the father on his side, and then you alternate. So we met somebody last night who seems to be one of 15 children. So that must have been a great
Wow.
ping pong match. A great ping pong match. I think Hanoch Teller, those of you who know him, the author, Hanoch Teller, grew up in Stamford, Connecticut, where I was a rabbi for 7 years. He has either 18 or 19 children. So that must have been a great ping pong match as to naming whose turn is it now. And his wife's name is Adel. How she got that for 19 kids? Kol HaKavod.
Any vices?
Any what?
Does she have any vices?
Any vices?
Edelweiss.
Oh, Edelweiss. Wow. Good one. Very nice.
There was
Very
one,
nice.
There was a stand-up comedian in Israel that talked about a family with, 15, 16 children, whatever. And then she said, it was only after a few years that they realized that they named two of them David.
Really? A little confused, eh?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So,
interesting.
Run out of names.
Yeah.
Yeah, after a while. Anyway, I want to welcome those who just came on. Good to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. And others felt the opposite. No, others say, no, it's the father's prerogative for the first child, the mother, second child, and so on and so forth. There was a case of twins where the older, there's always an older and a younger. I mean, somebody's got to be born first, even out of a pair of twins. Where the older one was not yet ready for the Brit Milah, the younger one was. And the husband felt that since the father names the second baby who is ready, he should give the name. So it was a whole to-do. Who should give the name? First child, second child. Reb Moshe Feinstein said it doesn't go by the age of the child. The wife gets to pick the first name, period. Gamarnu. That was his opinion. The wife picks the first kid, husband's second one, and so on and so forth. As to naming a boy with a girl's name, or the opposite, naming a girl with a boy's name, you can change the gender of the name, like Dan. Dan can become Dina, Baruch can become Bracha, so on. That seems to be not an issue. Within the non-Orthodox world, there you hear names like Avrahama. I don't know if you heard names like that. Yaakova, Yitzchaka. Very interesting. There is an opinion that says that living fathers and mothers have the first right to the naming to the exclusion of everybody else. So other people may say, the grandparents may say, I would like to name. I would like the name to be this and that. A strong opinion that says that the parents have the first right to name the children to the exclusion of all others, period. Period. It's their prerogative and it's their honor and their right. Regarding, okay.
Grandparents had their chance.
That's right. That's right. So now it's the kids. Now it's the parents' turn. Regarding naming in general, a key point is to avoid conflict about it. We mentioned that last week, to avoid fights and resentments. And the Kaf HaChaim says that fighting about the name, not just a mild disagreement, but an actual, I don't think he means like, fisticuffs, which is a word you don't hear that often, but actual fights about the name can cause great sakana to the newborn. And having shalom with the name that's finally given is of higher value than having a whole argument about good names. They're good names, but if it causes a whole sichsuch, you've missed the point. That's what the Kaf HaChaim says. And go for shalom. Maybe name the kid shalom after our shalom who's here today. Another opinion said avoid giving the child a name that will cause shame or embarrassment. We touched upon this last week. A nickname of someone, or a complicated name, or a funny sounding name, avoid it. Avoid it. It's the Shita Mekubetzet says it's like carrying an embarrassing name is like a mum. I mentioned that last week. It's even worse than a physical scar or blemish. So avoid it. No ridicule. Don't give a kid strange names that they'll carry and feel embarrassed about.
Boy named Sue.
Now, we mentioned that last week, the boy named Sue, Johnny
That's right.
Mizuman. Right? So there are varied themes, varied themes to Hebrew names. They're biblical names, names from the Talmud, names from the Midrash, things in nature, like Devorah, Tzipora, Yonah, Aryeh, Zev, Tzvi. There are things from nature like plants or fruits, names which include a Shem Hashem, Yirmiyahu, Chizkiyahu, and other names like that. There are biblical places that often become names of kids. There are great scholars whose names people take. There are great Tzioni names. Tzioni names. I was listening to a shiur a couple of days ago where he talks about if somebody has a very Tzioni name and then they move to an area, let's say in Eretz Yisrael or other places, where they don't particularly appreciate a Tzioni name for one reason or another, can you change that name or add a name? Anyway, it became an interesting discussion. Yiddish names can be translated to Hebrew. So there's a whole wide variety of names from which to choose. One opinion said we do not name after a Gosses. What is a Gosses?
Someone died in a bad
Somebody's
way.
dying, dying.
Not
Die,
Casper.
die. No,
Casper.
dying.
Is it Casper?
What do you mean, who's Casper?
Ghosts.
Skip over
Oh, the friendly ghosts. Is that what you were thinking? Wow, what a group we have today.
it.
Okay, we've all dipped in the cooking sherry at 8:45, and this is what happens.
Someone named Dayenu.
Right. Yeah,
Or on
a
paper.
gose, somebody who's dying. Most would say within 24 to 48 to 72 hours of what the doctors say is likely passing away. So we do not name after a gose, or after someone who died but has not yet been buried. That's an interesting opinion. Somebody actually passed away but not yet buried. One opinion says we don't name after that person. As to whether somebody wanted to say something? As to whether we give one name or two names, there are strong opinions on either side. I, for example, was only given one Hebrew name. My brother has two Hebrew names. My sister has two Hebrew names. So, mom liked them best, as they say. One commentary that I read said, nowhere in the Talmud, I can't verify this, but this is what he said, nowhere in the Talmud do we find a Tana or Amora who is called by two names. Now, I can't verify that, even though I did Daf Yomi once, but I can't say that I can verify that. As to naming both names when they mean the same thing, sometimes we have that. Aryeh Leib, Yitzchak Isaac, Yamot Zvi Hirsch, Zev Wolf, Shlomo Zalman.
Abraham Dov Zev.
That's right. Yeah, the Gabbai's nightmare. three names here, Ben, three names there. What'd you say? What was that? Generally, it's acceptable. From what I looked at, there seemed to be no problem with giving two names that pretty much mean the same thing. One opinion said a child should not be given the combined names of two people who feuded with each other, even if they were tzaddikim. How do you know they feuded with each other? I guess you would know. Was it in the news that they feuded with, or it was passed down that they feuded? So we don't give a combined names of two people, even if they were tzaddikim, if they feuded with each other. When I read that, I thought of the fact that very often we say that even great tzaddikim who feud with each other, it's kind of like a milchemet Hashem. You know, it's not really personal, but they're trying to get at what is the emet? What's the emet of whatever the issue is? And so in that sense, it's a feud, but they don't really mean it as a personal attack on each other. And if so, what would be the problem? Even if they were feuding, it's not really what we would call a personal attack. They just, for the sake of emet, feel differently about an issue. I don't know what to tell you about that. This was eye-catching to me. If a woman has a son from a second husband who died, she shouldn't name the baby after the first husband if the second husband objects. It's the same with a daughter born of a second wife when the first one died. So as a new wife or a new husband, the previous one passed away, a new child is born, could be a desire to name that child after the deceased first wife or husband. So can you do that? Should you do that? And the opinion was, if there's no objection, it's permissible. If there is an objection, not a good idea.
That wouldn't apply probably if there was Yibum. That's the purpose of Yibum.
Okay.
That's your name after the dead husband.
Right. So, but however, today there could be objections, being that there's not a whole lot of Yibum going on today.
Purpose of Yibum is to
carry on
the child.
Is to what?
Create a new child, not necessarily for a name, so that they should have children.
To carry on the name. But has anybody been to a good old-fashioned Yibum? Have you ever been to one? Not me. Actually, I did many, many years ago, many decades ago, when my grandmother, Alei Shalom, from my mother's side, Alei Shalom, She had a yibum in New York with the whole chalitza shoe and everything. Anyway, there is an interesting pasuk.
Yibum is getting married. Chalitza is not getting married.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
You went
right.
To a chalitza.
That's right. It was a chalitza. You're right. Thank you. Cooking sherry knocks in once again. Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph 25:25 regarding Naval. Abigail was speaking to David HaMelech about her first husband, and she said, "Kishmo Kenhu." You often hear that in eulogies, where somebody has a certain Hebrew name, and that's a thread pulled upon by the eulogizers. Kishmo Kenhu, just as his name is, that's how he was. Whatever the name is. And some people would point to that pasuk and that idea as a way of confirming that there's something prophetic that happens when a child is named by the parents. There again, that level of prophecy, that level of Ruach HaKodesh, Kishmo Kenhu, just as his name is, that's how he is. In a few shiurim, the question was raised about naming after people who were or are not observant, and this was very eye-catching to me. I never thought of that, to name it, that it might be problematic or an issue to name people after those who are not observant. So I don't know if you ever saw that that issue come up. The answer given most often is for the parent to think of a righteous, go ahead and name that person, even if it's after somebody who's not observant. But the suggestion is for the parent to think of a righteous person with that same name when doing the naming. So you want to name your kid Avraham after somebody who is not observant. Think of Avraham Avinu at the time that you're naming. That was, I saw that in several places. Think of tzaddikim, tzidkaniyot, when you're naming, if these individuals after whom they're named, they are not observed. I never heard of that issue. Has anybody heard of this issue? I'm not avoiding naming after people. I have not heard that. Shinui Hashem, who is the ambassador to China. Shinui Hashem, there's the idea of adding a name. Thank you, Alex. Adding a name. I appreciate it. You're sitting so comfortably on your sofa. It's great. It's great. Yes. Adding a name or changing a name. Usually it's adding a name when somebody's very, very ill. We mentioned this a while ago that I don't remember which posek it was, that when somebody is so gravely ill is not a time to change a name. So question would be, how do you know how ill somebody is going to become? You know, we have professional opinions that can advise us on that. We have doctors, we have surgeons, we have all kinds of people in the healthcare field who can say to us, you know something, if you got to know, this doesn't look good. So I remember reading that opinion that if it's so grave already, that's not a good time to change the name. It should be changed before. Anyway, so very often we add a name as opposed to change the name. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that there are four things that can mitigate a terrible decree, namely tzedakah, giving charity, tzeaka, which is a very fervent form of screaming out, yelling out to Hashem. Some would say that that's an audible screaming and yelling. Others would say that's an internal intensity of prayer, is tzeaka litzok. The third one is shinui Hashem, changing the name. And the fourth one is shinui ma'aseh, changing the way you are doing things, changing your behavior, which is another way to say tshuva. So those four things mitigate a terrible decree. Avram and Sarai had their names changed and their mazel changed. The Rama teaches that in shul, when a new name is given, it tears up the old decree. So you get a new name, is a new decree. The old decree does not apply to the newly named person. That's the idea. Now, I would like to suggest that I wonder if there's ever been long-range studies of cases where names were changed and what the outcome was. Do you know what I'm saying? Like a half a year study of people who had name changes, relatives who had name changes, and lema'aseh, what happened? I think this is a very strong belief that when we change the name, God willing, it changes the decree. At the same time, I also wonder what practically do we notice in that regard? For me, that would be a very interesting thing to look at. The Sefer Achinuch has a different way of looking at this. He says the person becomes a different person. It changes the sixth person's perspective and they are called to tshuva. So once their name is changed, it's not so much the decree necessarily, it's more that they now become a different type of person and they are going to make changes in their life, namely a tshuva process. The Maharal says the name change affects the inner essence of the person. So it's not just a kind of a uniform. It's not it's not an outfit that's now you're wearing a new name. And it's something new that you're wearing No, this new name really changes the essence of who you are. And that causes you to move in more positive, religious, spiritual, observant directions. And the Chida says a name change draws a new neshama into the person. So you see that there are various opinions about what this name change or adding a name does, very different perspectives on how this affects the individual.
I knew a woman who didn't have a Jewish name. She was given a name, Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach. He gave her the name Teshuva.
To who?
A woman who didn't have a Jewish name.
Oh. He gave her the name Teshuva.
That's the name she's been known by ever since.
Really? Do you know her? Do you know who this is?
I knew her.
You knew her. Wow. Okay. Interesting.
She was in Crown Heights. So.
Oh. He gave her the name Teshuva. Maybe he was hoping she would return again and again. Okay, he gave his own girls interesting names. Neshama. I think the other one was Yetera. No. What was the other one's name? Neshama and Tehila. No, I don't remember. But also very.
The first one was Neshama Tahora.
Neshama Tahora, and he had another daughter. As another daughter.
Don't know.
I think Kathy. I think, no, it's you can look it up in the biography.
Jennifer,
Talmud, yeah, Jennifer. The Kitzur Shalah, the Shalah, says if a name was added and the person died shortly thereafter, the added name need not be on the tombstone.
Oh yeah.
The Ashkenazim often keep the added name.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends also how long they lived after they changed the name.
Right. So the opinion that I saw in the name of the Kitzur Shalah was that if the person died shortly thereafter. So your question is, what is shortly?
No, my father, when he was very sick, so we added a name and he died the next day. So they said, don't put it on the tombstone.
I remember when Ovadia Yosef was very, very ill, there was a massive Tehillim gathering at the Kotel. I remember being there. Massive, thousands, 50, 60,000. That was the number given. I think within a day or two, he also passed away. So to wrap this whole topic up.
Kalbach's sister's name's Nadera.
Her sister's name is what?
Nadera.
Nadera?
Like a neder.
Wow. Okay.
Nadara. Nadara. Nadara.
Maybe Nadara.
Madara.
Oh, I guess when she was born, he went, wow, isn't she beautiful? Anyway, wrapping this whole thing up.
People change their names because in another language, they sound funny. Like the name, like someone I know whose name was Dudu, changed his name to David, even because he was legally Dudu.
Right. So David Fisher is Dudu Fisher.
Or Nimrod or Osnat.
Osnat. Potifera. Osnat, yeah. Yeah. So listen, there are some, my mother, Allah Shalom, was named Schwarzel Tova, Schwarzel.
Really? Yeah.
He hated it from the moment she understood it till the day she died, Schwarzel. I don't know if she was given Tova, but they moved from Hungary to Israel for 12 and a half years. And she took the name Tova. I don't think that was Schwarzel Tova when she was born. Maybe it was, I don't know. But anyway, she hated it. But, you know, we put it on the stone. I have her name and my father's name, Alav Shalom, on my Atara, on my Talit. And Schwarzel Tova. So last thing we're going to look at in this topic is, there's opinions that say you should not name after Rishaim. We don't name after terrible, evil people. The Pasuk in Mishlei, chapter 10, Pasuk 7, where it says, a phrase we're probably familiar with, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, V'shem Rishaim Yirkav. The remembrance of the righteous brings blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot. What does Rashi say? He says, since no one wants to mention the name of the wicked, it'll rot in the sense that it'll be forgotten. So those that say we should not name after Rishaim.
You see that with the generation before World War II, a lot of prominent Jews named Adolf, and then they stopped using that name.
Right. Right. One of the shurim I was listening to talked about that name, Adolf. And how many people wanted to change that? So in general, there seems to be an accepted opinion that we don't name after Rishaim. However, another shiur I listened to said that there may be some exceptions to this idea of not naming after a rasha. For example, a rasha can refer to a mechalel Shabbat. Okay, I was not happy to read that. That's not my path of thinking. But so if it's a mechalel Shabbat.
That's what you said earlier about someone who's not observant.
Yeah. So that makes me uncomfortable to think that we should not name after people who are not observant, but other people may feel very differently. If somebody was named after a Mechalel Shabbat, or they're going to, like I mentioned before, think of a tzaddik's name with the same name when you name that individual, or add a more positive second name. If the Russia did tshuva, there seems to be opinions that say it's okay. And another opinion with this, we'll close this topic. If Hashem chose the name like Yishmael, this is a God chosen name, then we can use it. If Hashem used it, we can use it too. Anyway, there are so many more. I'm looking at several books on my shelf here. There are so many other branches to this whole baby naming thing.
Ishmael did tshuvah, so I think you're covered in both ends.
Oh, okay.
Could I add something to the nevuah part?
Yeah, sure.
Personal. My daughter is adopted from Guatemala.
Wow.
And, before we processed, they had to be given a name, even though we didn't know that name until later. So her name was Maria Alejandra. Her parents, her mother gave it to her. Well, my wife and I, our names are Marilyn and Alex. So Maria comes from Mary, so does Marilyn and Alex. And Alejandro is Alex. So her parents gave her our names, and we ended up adopting her.
Wow. Isn't that interesting?
Of course, that's no longer her name. But
so what is her name now?
Saradina.
There you go. It's a perfect translation. Wow.
So they had nevuah somehow.
Isn't that interesting? Wow. Right? Beautiful. That's a great story.
I have to share it.
No, I appreciate it. But the famous Alejandro, I remember from The Flying Nun, Alejandro Rey. Remember him?
Sure.
Yeah, the convent Santanco. Okay, so we have two other topics that I'd like to bring up. One of them is related to this coming Tuesday, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And that's the question of there's a purported upcoming solar eclipse in America, right? Am I right? It's in America?
Yep.
Over a certain swath of America. It's not world.
Yeah,
over.
On the 8th.
On the 8th, right.
8th of April. Think,
yeah.
8th of.
Yeah. 8th of April. I heard somebody say in one of the shurim I was listening to, excuse me, that a solar eclipse is always on a Rosh Chodesh. I don't know enough about it. But that's what I heard. And okay. So my curiosity was, is there a bracha for a solar eclipse? This is not a long topic. There was so much disagreement, so much agreement on this issue. Is there a bracha for a solar eclipse? I mean, one would think that there would be. Why not? We have a bracha for lightning. We have a bracha for thunder. We have a bracha for earthquakes. Is this any less amazing? Awesome to some degree, that there shouldn't be a bracha. So this is what I was looking into. It's a brief exploration of this, because a lot of the stuff I found, whether it was in a Sheer online or online discussions or on websites, there seemed to be a lot of agreement about the final answer to this question of, is there a bracha that you would say on a solar eclipse? So the Or HaChaim 227, right at the beginning, it lists occasions for the times that you say the bracha of Osei Maaseh Bereshit. I think today we say that for lightning. It used to be, from what I read, it used to be that that was Osei Maaseh Bereshit was also for thunder. Today, I think today the practice is that thunder gets the Kocho Ugvorato Malei Olam, and the lightning gets Osei Maaseh Bereshit. Anyway, in the beginning of the Or HaChaim 227, it says there the Osei Maaseh Bereshit for thunder, lightning, great winds, great winds. There's no mention of an eclipse. But one could say, as I just did, isn't an eclipse an awesome and somewhat eye-catching occurrence, at least as much as thunder, lightning, especially in those seasons where it occurs so often? It's at least as incredible as some of the other phenomenon that we observe and for which there is a bracha. So Rav Chaim David Halevi suggests in his Sefer Tshuvot Asei Lecha Rav, he says it's recited only for natural events which are part of Maaseh Bereshit. Osei Maaseh Bereshit is recited for natural events which are part of Maaseh Bereshit. So, again, I don't know enough about this whole topic. I couldn't tell you five things about a solar eclipse, when, how, who, and all, how it lines up. This is far from me. At the same time, I tried to imagine for myself, weren't solar eclipses part of 6 days of creation? Not that it happened then, but it's in the mill to occur at such and such time. So I wasn't really sure what the Reb Chaim David Halevi was saying, that we only say it is part of events which are part of Maaseh Bereshit. To me, erroneously or not, everything is part of Maaseh Bereshit. Whatever's going to be rolled out into the world until Mashiach comes seems to me like it was created at that time. But
there are things that, you know, you see a very beautiful sunset. I mean, that could happen every day.
Right.
You wouldn't make a bracha on that.
We generally don't. Yeah. Now, what if somebody wanted? What if somebody wanted to?
You do say
Oh, so Avi, you're saying like when you see a beautiful sunset, the Rimon crater, right? You look down in the crater. Oh my gosh! So some people would say Ma Rabu Masech Hashem. Look at this. It's not a bracha, but it's an acknowledgement, nevertheless, that you have created a wondrous world, which is worth paying attention to.
The Lubavitcher Rebbe said that we don't institute a bracha that was not mentioned in the Talmud. So since there's no no blessing was instituted for eclipse, because an eclipse was a bad omen.
Right. So there are many opinions who say that an eclipse is a bad omen. There are those who differentiate between a lunar eclipse and a solar eclipse, where one is a bad omen for the Jews and the other one, I don't remember which is which, and the other one is a bad omen for the entire world.
The first one was a real doozy.
The
first eclipse, people didn't know. They thought that was it, that the world's over.
Yeah, right. What do they say about Adam HaRishon when the sun was set? Right? He said, oh my gosh, what happened? The whole world has disappeared. That's what I remember.
They talk about an Air Force pilot who asked Rav Aviner, he said, I'm going to be flying a new F-16 plane. First time it's being flown. And should I make a Shechiyanu? And he said, yeah, you should, but you should wear a new shirt.
Yeah, hedge your bets.
Yeah.
Hedge gold mail.
Right.
Afterwards.
Right, and wear a raincoat like you're under a chuppah. Anyway, So the Gemara in
Yeah,
Sukkah, 20.
do you know why they wear the raincoats?
I looked it up,
I've been
and
asking hundreds of people this when they get married indoors wearing a raincoat.
I looked it up a few weeks ago, and I did not see anything that was satisfying to me.
Okay.
That's pretty much how I judge it.
Is that
I
under
judge
the
it. Is it
kittel or
satis-
over the
is it
kittel?
satisfying to me? And if it's not, then I don't know what to do with it. You know, I
Where
can't teach it enthusiastically if I don't feel.
is the raincoat worn? Is it over the kittel or under the kittel? Over.
I think it's over the kittel.
Over
Yeah.
the kittel.
Yeah, over and under. Now we're getting back to the pilot. Yeah, it's over I believe it's over the kittel.
And this is I don't think I've ever
It's
seen
over
that.
the kittel, and it's
Oh.
also
Has anybody seen this?
and this is only in the winter and the summer also.
Yeah,
All the
I
time. Yeah.
Litvish weddings, Litvish weddings. You'll see.
Litvata. Okay.
Not
Hasidic
Hasidic wedding?
weddings. Hasidic
Not.
weddings.
Yeah, I've seen it. Often
Raincoat?
is overstating it, but I've seen it enough that it makes an impact. If you're outside and it's cold and it's raining, okay. Anyway, the Gemara in Sukkah 29a talks about a likui chama, which technically would be a sun's diminution. Now, if you look likui chama in there's an app called Morphix. If you look under the word eclipse and translates into Hebrew, that's the translation it gives you, likui chama. And the Gemara there in Sukkah says it's a response to man's sinful behavior. That's now did they it is a it's a punishment and an ominous sign. And many commentaries assume that likui chama is a solar eclipse, and as such, they were not part of the natural sequence and order of creation. And again, that is not clear to me what they mean by that. If I believe, and I'm not saying I'm right, that whatever was going to happen from creation until Yemot HaMashiach, if whatever is going to be rolled out in the future, my understanding was all created during the 6 days, but I could be way off. The Maharal says when solar eclipses occur at predictable times, how can they be a response to human conduct? In other words, you just mentioned Arthur the Rebbe, who said that it's a ominous sign and it's got negative connotations. But there are many who say that no, these happen at predictable intervals, and if so, what are they trying to correct if they're predictable? That's what the Maharal says. I have the observations that after the flood, Hashem promises the days and seasons will return. You know, because of our whole time period, everything was all fartumeled, as they say. So I asked myself the question, why wouldn't eclipses be part of what was created in the beginning? Why not eclipses? So you can tell I don't know enough about eclipses, but also, what about the rainbow? The rainbow was after creation. Say that again.
The eclipse is like it could be a reminder, like the rainbow.
In what sense?
That instead of being punished, that's like a reminder. You did something wrong. You did
Oh,
something
it's like
wrong.
a reminder.
Yeah.
A reminder to. Okay. It could be.
Rabbi,
Yes,
also
sweet.
weren't the rainbows, they were created before with Maaseh Bereishit, but they didn't get that significance until after the Mabul.
Right. So that's exactly what my question is, that solar eclipses, in my feeling, must have also been created. That
Absolutely.
possibility, that potential also must have been created during Maaseh Bereishit. And
As
why is
well.
it? Why is it not addressed with a bracha like so many other things?
Right, so they certainly were. As long as you have an earth and a moon and a sun, you're going to have solar eclipses. And because it's Rosh Chodesh, that's dafka why they happen around Rosh Chodesh.
Okay, I agree with you. And yet, the punchline is yet to come. but I appreciate what you said. So I was asking myself too, why not? So why not create a new bracha for this phenomenon? For those opinions who say, you know, this was post-creation, whatever. So create a new one. It's certainly an eye-catching, to some awe-inspiring thing to notice and to behold. So, if an eclipse is a bad omen, like the Rebbe says, that they should be opportunities to increase in prayer and introspection, and not necessarily to prompt a joyous blessing. That's not what it came to do, says the Rebbe. At the same time, we have a Mishnah in Brachot, last chapter of Brachot, Mishnah 5. It says, Chayav Adam levarech al hara'a, kishem shemavarech al hatova. A person is as obligated to bless the bad, what we perceive as bad, just as much as we are obligated to bless the good. So even according to the Rebbe, who may think and others may agree that this is a bad omen, so we kishem shemivarchim al hara, we should maybe make a bracha, even if it's a bad omen, to still make a bracha and just acknowledge that it's there, acknowledge this phenomenon. Okay.
But by the Nobody way, asked as me. You mentioned earlier, a solar eclipse can only happen during a new moon.
That's what I
just looked it up. But yes. Lunar eclipses happen on the 15th. So it's like
it's a full moon.
Yeah, exactly. So you have it's just math in essence. It's just the teva.
Okay. I hear that. So now the question is, if there was going to be a bracha for a solar eclipse, what would be the proper bracha for that? So Reb Chaim David Alevi, he says, since the Chachamim didn't specify bracha, we don't institute one. We mentioned that opinion earlier. Nobody mentions one, so who are we to institute one? What, solar eclipses didn't happen in those days? We assume they did. No bracha was instituted, so we don't either. There's also the idea of safek brachot lehakel. You know, if you're not sure if you should make one, you shouldn't make one. I thought I did. I don't remember if I did or didn't. The policy is to be more makel and to not say it, to not repeat the bracha. It could be a bracha lebatala. My question on that was, when Shabbat is over, many people say, if they're in such a position, they say Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh Lachol. They don't say the Shem Umalchut, just Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh Lachol, and then they go along and do what they need to do. So why couldn't a bracha, in order to avoid it being Levatala, why couldn't you say Baruch Osei Maaseh Bereishit, Baruch Shekocho? That was my thinking. It was not replicated in anything I saw or heard, but that was my thinking. Just say it. You're not really instituting a new bracha, and you're not using the Shem Hashem. So here's the surprise ending. So again, we have two strong candidates for a bracha: Osei Maaseh Bereishit and Shekocho Ugvurato Male Olam. Those are two of the most prominent candidates of brachot to be recited for a solar eclipse. One could also say, maybe we should say both. Can't make up your mind as to which one. Why not say both? The answer could be, because neither one is appropriate. Now you've got two brachot levatala instead of just one. Let's look at three opinions, and then we'll close this topic. Rav Malamed, the Rav in Ahara Bracha, he said that the bracha of Shekocho Ugvorato Male Olam, that is his earth, filled, his koach and his strength fills the world. He says we say that over scary events. And Osei Maaseh Bereishit is for more common, less scary events. So one could say, is a solar eclipse scary? Well, if you hold like the Lubavitcher Rebbe that it's a bad omen, in that sense, it could be scary. But there's also the element that it's dangerous to look at if you just look, right? That's what everybody tells us. You should make a certain kind of a box or whatever. Remember those things? Don't look directly at the sun because it could. So right. Maybe there could be this negative or dangerous sakana element to it. And perhaps that's why Rav Melamed looks at it this way. Rav David Lau, the current Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel, he says, since the Talmud has no prescribed bracha, we don't say one. And the Stipler Rav says, no bracha on a solar eclipse. The bottom line on this issue is, I did not find, and I can't say I poured hours and hours into this, I did not, but listened to several shirim online, looked at various sources on various websites, I found zero opinion that said there should be a bracha, and here is the bracha. Didn't find such a thing. Now, if you look around, you may find one, and if you do, let me know, but I did not find any opinion like that.
The Mishnah Brura also says,
what does he say?
That the Sefer Hasidim says one should fast on the day of a lunar eclipse.
Okay.
You know, and Rabbi Nachum Lang says that it's forbidden to marry on the day of any kind of eclipse. And even though a solar eclipse occurs on, as I mentioned earlier, on Rosh Chodesh, fast would be forbidden under the general prohibition of not fasting on a Rosh Chodesh.
Yeah, right.
You wear a raincoat, it's okay.
If you wear a raincoat. Yeah, because the gematria of raincoat without the vav is whatever. Okay, last thing we're going to look at. Just have a few moments left. You may be familiar with why this is, but it was always eye-catching to me that why in the benching do we have the two various versions of Magdil and Migdol? Magdil, we say that during the week, and Migdol, Shabbat, Yom Tov, Rosh Chodesh, Chol HaMoed. Why do we have those two different words? Anybody have seen anything on that?
Typo?
What do you mean?
Someone printed it wrong.
A printer's error.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is mentioned.
I had heard that one too.
That it's a printer's error.
Yeah.
Tzvi, I see that you're working now at Walmart. You have that the Walmart icon right above you. Is that a ceiling fan?
That is a ceiling fan.
Oh, okay. I read that Walmarts are going to open up in Israel. Was this a joke, or did you anybody hear this? I just saw this yesterday. Are going to open up a Walmart?
Yeah, they're closing a lot of stores in America because of the shoplifting. So,
so Israel at war is a perfect place to. Wow.
Does it require a bracha?
There you go. And how many vavs can you find? How many vavs can you find to make Walmart? You know, you have to keep producing them. Anyway, so we'll just look at this very, very quickly. We just have a few moments. The Gemara in Shabbat, 115a, says that the rabbis forbade reading from the Ketuvim on Shabbat. Now, the pasuk that uses the word migdol, the pasuk that uses magdil, comes from Tehillim 18:51. It's the last pasuk in chapter Yudchet in Tehillim, uses the word magdil, and that is found in Ketuvim. So the Gemara in Shabbat says the rabbis forbade reading from the Ketuvim on Shabbat. Why? In earlier times, they were worried about the neglect of people coming on Shabbat afternoon to the study hall to hear shiurim. So it says there, Umi pnei ma ein korin bahem, why don't we read Ketuvim on Shabbat? Mi pnei bitul beit hamidrash. Rabbis were worried that the reading of the Ketuvim on Shabbat would stop people from coming to the Beit Midrash on Shabbat later. in the day to hear shiurim. So apparently in Talmudic times, the lectures on halacha were given in the Beit Midrash, as during the week, most people were earning a livelihood. So they were not likely to come out on a Monday night at a here's a shiur, there's a shiur. The time they were most available was Shabbat afternoon to come hear shiurim on halacha. Interestingly enough, it's the only time you can't really take notes. So you're hearing halacha, but you have to really focus and remember what you heard. So to maximize the attendance on Shabbat afternoon, reading of the Ketuvim was forbidden. Why? They were considered to be the most engaging parts of Tanakh, as evidenced by the fact that the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur night, he was read from Ketuvim to keep him awake. So this indicated that people were really into it. It was very engaging. And if you allow Ketuvim to be studied on Shabbat afternoon, they're not going to be able to break away from that and come to hear a halachic shir. Later, this ban was lifted, but that was around for a while. I don't know how long. The Rugachev Gaon, he explained the change that we make on non-weekdays. So again, Magdil during the weekdays, Migdol on Shabbat, Yontav, and other kinds of similar occasions. He says, since Magdil is from the Ketuvim, from Tehillim, which was forbidden on Shabbat and Yom Tov, it was replaced with Migdol because it was a close match. Where is Migdol? It's in Shmuel Bet, chapter 22. So true that in Shabbat davening, there are several verses for the Ketuvim. One of us could have said, hey, you look through Shabbat davening today, there are Ketuvim references. I thought we stayed away from that on Shabbat. But again, the ban was lifted, and nowadays we do have these kind of psukim, etc. The bottom line is, we only have another minute or so. The bottom line is that there seems to have been a printer's error, while some totally discount that. And apparently the printer's error was, this is in the Torah Tamima, the change may be from a misreading of an abbreviation in the early printings of their Birkat HaMazon. What was it? In the margin, next to the word Magdil. And where does Magdil come from? That comes from Tehillim, right there. The following appeared in parentheses, Migdol Shin Bet. That the word, this is Magdil, but the word Migdol is Shin Bet. What did Shin Bet want to signify? Shmuel Bet. However, that was the intent, to say that a similar word is found in Shmuel Bet. However, later printers who copied from the earlier manuscripts misinterpreted this Shin Bet to suggest that this word Magdil is on Shabbat. Shin Bet was like an abbreviation for Shabbat. So it was meant to signify it comes from Shmuel Bet, but it was misread as this is the word read on Shabbat. Okay. There are those who suggest that that's a terribly wrong understanding for various reasons for which we have no time, but just a little pitchifke, as they say in Yiddish, which I don't speak, just a little thought about these two words. I don't know that I saw anywhere, with this I'll close, I don't know that I saw anywhere that if you say the wrong word for the occasion...
By the way, the problem with this theory is that that's assuming it's a printer's error, but they found that it predated the printing.
Yes. It predated the printing, right. This is Rabbi, are you reading Rabbi Apple's article?
Yes, 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 you are. Yes.
And what do you say on apples? Bo Ray? He recently passed away, Oliver Shaw.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, so it's I just want to wrap up. I don't remember reading an opinion that said if you said Migdol, you should have said Magdil. I don't see an opinion. There may be one where whatever you say is fine. I don't know that you have to go back and say the proper one.
It's not a Zecher, anyway. Zecher.
It's what? Right, Zecher, like Zecher. Zecher. Right. Yeah, that was a fun one. Anyway, thank you all for joining us today. Enjoy the next year. Yeah. And be happy, healthy, and safe. Have
thank
a great
you.
Shabbat. And happy Rosh Chodesh. We won't see you till next Thursday, God willing.
Shabbat shalom. Chodesh tov. We only say Zecher. In the Geffen Shul, we only say Zecher.
Only Zecher.
Zecher. Only
wow.
Zecher.
Okay. I think in most, I the ones I go to say both. But
okay.
There's certainly
I think in the Gersh, they used to only say Zecher. And Aidan O'Cohen says that's the way it is in the Keter.
Oh, so was that a Rav Riskin psak kind of thing, or that's?
I have no idea. I just felt stupid reading the pasuk twice, so I decided only to say Zecher, and nobody ever corrected me.
Great, and then the people showed up. That's why nobody corrected you. Anyway, be well, everybody.